First of all, I just want to say a few words about what this story is not about. It's not about pity, it's not about sympathy, and it's not about dwelling on misfortune. Stephen Frank isn't interested in any of those things. What this story is really about, I've learned from Stephen, is something elementally human. It's about inventiveness, survival, connection, and the fact that we're always going to find a way to communicate.
Hi!
For our purposes here, tactile sign language interpreter Susan Heaney is going to be the voice of Stephen. Susan and I met Stephen at the doorway of his home after we rang a special doorbell that buzzes a vibrating pager that he wears on his belt. Stephen instinctively reaches out his hands when we arrive, and Susan puts her own hands into his outstretched palms. He feels her fingers as she signs hello and introduces us.
How's everything with you? I want to introduce you to Aaron.
Now, as you're going to hear, Stephen is a real technology buff. One of the first things he signs to Susan is to ask if he can check out my portable recording equipment.
Sure. Well, you're here, check it out.
Stephen is a wiry, gray-bearded 63-year-old with unfocused eyes and a permanent half-grin. He turns around and motions for us to follow him up the stairs. And then he bounds up the stairway, startlingly fast, opens up a safety gate at the top of the staircase, points us to his dining room table, and motions us to sit down.
I think I'll just go ahead and sit here, if that's okay. And Susan can sit next to me.
First of all, Stephen, thank you again for taking the time to do this. I appreciate you sharing your experience with us.
You're very welcome. It's perfectly fine.
I understand you were born congenitally deaf, but it wasn't until you were a teenager that you started to lose your vision?
Yes, that's right. I did not know that there was anything wrong with my vision. I did not know I was going to be blind. I was 13, and I went to school for the deaf, and people were signing and waving at me, and they thought I wasn't paying attention. And so they told my parents that I needed to go see the doctor and get checked. And they found out that I had a bit of tunnel vision. And later I found out that I had Usher syndrome.
A couple of words of explanation here about Usher syndrome. If you have it, it'll hit you in one of four ways. Early blind, early deaf, late blind, late deaf, early blind, late deaf, or early deaf, late blind. Stephen falls into that last category. His vision loss has been a long, slow process of deterioration. First, it was the tunnel vision, then blind spots, and then onward downhill from there. For him, it was a stepwise process marked by having to give up various things that he loved to do. Gourmet cooking, watching movies, reading conventional print, working his job in the library at Gallaudet University. And he says he clung to denial along the way, like anyone would.
There was an organization called the Metro Washington Association of the Deaf Blind, and also there was AADB, the American Association of Deaf Blind. But I thought, well, nah, I don't need that. It was almost, you know, offended, thinking, well, I don't need this organization. And I could sign just fine, and I had deaf friends, and I didn't have a problem with it. But then one of my best friends, who is deafblind, went to the American Association of Deafblind conference and let me know that it was so enjoyable and invited me to go. And I thought, well, why should I go? You know, will I know friends there? And this person said, oh, yeah, you'll know the interpreters. You'll know a lot of the people there. And so I went to an AADB conference, and I had a great time. And there were workshops, and I learned things about Usher syndrome research. And so I'd say, really, I learned to accept it when I was probably, 35, 36. Yeah, my mid-30s is when I really started to accept what I was dealing with.
When you communicate with other people who are deaf and blind, is there a shared perspective or understanding that you think maybe sighted people and people with hearing might not have about life?
One main thing is that the social life is different. Deaf-blind people get together and they may talk about research that's going on in the field or going camping. We have a deaf-blind camp that we get together. and we'll meet somebody and they'll say, mm-hmm. oh, you've never been mm-hmm. to that? And so a lot of times mm-hmm. it's sharing of information mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. people that mm-hmm. are new to the mm-hmm. community don't know mm-hmm. about. Mm-hmm. But basically we mostly mm-hmm. just, you know, mm-hmm. we talk about technology. Mm-hmm. And yeah. what yeah. new things are invented yeah. in reading Braille mm-hmm. and computer technology. Mm-hmm. So we share a lot of that yeah. through email. It's very important. Before we had email, it was so different. Yeah. Being able to use email and Braille email has just made a huge difference in our lives.
When you think about it, it's pretty incredible just how many different ways Stephen has learned to communicate over the course of his life. First, he learned lip reading. Then it was finger spelling, drawing letters on the palm of a hand. Then it was sign language. He learned that in eighth grade. And then later, as his vision started to dim, it was tactile sign language, holding the hands of a sign interpreter. And finally, about 10 years ago, it was time to learn Braille.
First grade Braille is pretty easy. You know, I got an A learning that. And then it, of course, gets progressively more difficult, and there's a lot more contractions. For example, good in Braille is just GD. Friend in Braille is FR. But there's about 250 words that are used as a contraction or an abbreviation rather than the whole word spelled out. And that's part of learning Braille, is learning the Braille vocabulary.
Now, I mentioned before that Stephen is a real technology fanatic. Most people in his situation are, understandably so. Stephen's got all sorts of stuff wired to that buzzer he wears on his belt. He's got the doorbell, the smoke alarm, and of course the telephone, which particular device may seem a little pointless in his house, until you see just how he's got it rigged.
Okay, what I'm going to show you here is a Braille display TTY. And what I can do is I can do a test call, for example. I will call the Maryland relay. And this is how I would make a telephone call. I have a unit here with a keyboard, and I set the telephone in a coupler that is attached to the TTY. That tone is the tone that typing the keys makes into the telephone. And then beneath the TTY is an attachment that gives me refreshable Braille, which is Braille dots that come up each time a different letter is typed. So I just dialed 711. That is the number that you use to connect to the relay. And now I'm feeling with my fingers as it says, Maryland Relay, number please. And GA, which means go ahead, that is how deaf people communicate when we are using text on a telephone. When we know we're done making a sentence, we say GA. And now I'm typing, and I said, for example, what time is it now? And the operator is typing in response, one moment, please. And it is saying, operator here, the time is 2:06 p.m. GA, go ahead. Okay. Thanks. And I type SKSK, which means stop keying or end of conversation. But what you would normally do is you would call the relay and give them the phone number of someone who's hearing, either a friend or a business you want to reach or a hotel, and the relay operator here types the conversation back and forth. This is a metal, basically, strip with holes in it for me to make Braille. There's a stylus. It's a, just a small handheld thing that you poke through. So I call and make a doctor's appointment. I'll make myself a note in Braille. So I don't write myself a note if I want to remember something. I'll pull this out and I'll make a note to myself. Okay, well, the doctor said Tuesday at 10 o'clock, and I'll actually punch it into the paper here. And the other thing I have is for handling money. Since paper money all feels the same, it's hard to know what the difference is. And so I actually have an electronic handheld unit here that I can slide money into. And three dots means it's a $5 bill.
Ever since he retired about 10 years ago, Stephen's computer room has been his sanctuary, his operating headquarters, and his real link to the outside world. It's where he reads internet news updates, researches technologies, and maintains his email correspondence with friends, all of it through an adaptive program called Window Eyes and an electronic refreshable braille device with a row of little silver dots that are constantly reconfiguring themselves underneath his scanning fingers.
I just leave the monitor off because I don't look at the monitor at all. I can't see it. Okay, so I can tell here that I've got it open, and I've got my email files in front of me, and I can tell that from my refreshable braille keyboard. I have a printer here, but I don't use that to print text. I connect to an embosser, which actually prints in braille over here to my left. The equipment I have here, I got with help from the state for my braille refreshable cells. This is an example of some braille from the embosser. It basically looks like a white piece of paper, but it's got tactile dots all over it.
Stephen says that every once in a while, he can still see traces of light in his left eye. The headlights of a passing car at night, or the flashing lights of an ambulance. He says he was able to make out some fireworks last 4th of July after they were carefully pointed out to him. He glimpsed the light of the full moon recently, saw the light from some Hanukkah candles not too long ago. And when you hear him talk about these fleeting images and the memories they represent, you really have to start to wonder about just how well the rest of us might cope in Stephen's shoes.
Help me understand what it's like psychologically to be born missing one of your senses and then come to a realization that you were going to lose another one of your senses.
Basically, I've had some frustrations. I've had to be more careful. I miss seeing pictures. I miss being able to just read normally the way I had. You know, I used to look at photos of my old friends and so forth. And, you know, really now it's a case of waiting for a cure. And I'm very patient and, you know, just waiting for hopefully a cure for my vision.
I just want to thank you again for sharing your life with us. It's been really great meeting you, and I thought you were an impressive person when we communicated by email, and I think so doubly now that I've gotten to meet you in person. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You can see a photograph of Stephen Frank and find a link to the Foundation Fighting Blindness online at our website, wypr.org/thesignal. For The Signal, I'm Aaron Henkin.